This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host John Wells. Our next guest is Park City local Bill Neal, who has written and directed the 2019 documentary Long Gone Wild. This film carries an important message regarding the cruel and inhumane treatment of the species orca, the killer whale. Neal's film also addresses the disturbing developments surrounding Russia and China. Russia is live capturing orcas and selling them to the exploding Chinese marine theme park industry. There are 60 parks and counting for a reported $6 million each. Bill Neal, it's great to have you. Welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you, Lynn. John, thank you for having me.
Well, not only are you a Park City local, but you have a long list of television credits. You're producer, director. You've been in the movie scene for a really long time, mostly in Los Angeles. But I'm curious, what attracted you? Did you see the documentary Blackfish first? Was that it? What attracted you to making this movie?
I did see Blackfish, but before that, I had written a book called Rogue Justice about killer whales. And when I was living in L.A. and I leased my place in L.A., lived up in Port Townsend, Washington for 6 months to research and write the book. And during that time, I met a lot of orca experts and got to see orcas live in the wild. And so that's really where the fascination initially began.
And you have a lot of great footage from the Port Townsend area in the film. And also, it's really heavy hitting in the beginning of the film. You're talking with a lot of these experts, and it seems like the prevailing sentiment is that they're incredulous that what has gone on with the orcas in terms of quote-unquote training them is just hard to believe that anyone would attempt that with a killer whale.
That's true. These are absolutely magnificent animals, and the last place they belong is in a concrete pool basically the size of a hotel swimming pool. These animals will swim in the wild 100 or more miles per day. They'll dive to depths of 300 or more feet. And obviously, in captivity, they're stuck in these pools, basically swimming in circles.
When I watched the film, I had a very strong reaction to it. And I think that other people that I've spoken to as well really get rattled when they see it. There's a lot of really important messages, including the update to SeaWorld, the potential sanctuaries for whales for those 20 in the United States at SeaWorld properties that are still on property to maybe move them along. And then, of course, there's the Chinese middle class, which is swelling to upwards of 800 million people by 2020. And those people are demanding entertainment. And it's as a result of that that these Chinese entrepreneurs have planned these 60 SeaWorld-type theme parks. Tell us about the Chinese piece and how Russia is involved.
Well, for years, it has been against the law, really, around the world to capture orcas. It hasn't been happening in North America since the late 80s. But in the last year or so, the Russians have begun live capturing orcas again. And it's a brutal, cruel thing that they do because they basically pull these orcas away from their families, young orcas, because they're easier to train. And as you mentioned, the Chinese are opening these parks literally practically every other day in China. There's 60 now. They've got 20 under construction. And as you also mentioned, the middle class is expected to reach some 800 million people within 10 years or so. And they want to feed that market. And unfortunately, it's a very regressive move on the part of the Chinese, whereas in many other areas, they are trying to be progressive on climate change. They've stopped the ivory trade pretty much. And so this, to go back to what SeaWorld started some 50 years ago, is a very regressive policy. And in that, hopefully there might be some opportunity to reach out to the Chinese leadership. And there, of course, it only takes one man to stop this.
That's right.
If he says we stop it, it'll stop overnight, literally, despite whatever's gone on with some of these parks. But these parks are massive. We were over there. I was there with Rick O'Berry, as you'll remember from The Cove. And they're huge. They're huge parks. So it is a real issue.
Can you tell us how you ended up skirting a Chinese jail? I mean, you could have been put away forever.
It was a very scary time. We basically, what we did, we got the GPS coordinates for a location by this big theme park in Zhuhai, China, where they supposedly had 9 orcas hidden away that they were training. There were questions about whether all 9 were even still alive, because photos and other information only showed 6. We wanted to try to find out. So we got the GPS coordinates. We found the location. It was about maybe a mile from the park in Zhuhai, and called Chimelong Park. And we somehow managed to get through security and get there. That's a story in and of itself. But we did get onto the site. We were there. We were taking photos. We had our camera guy there, our U.S. cameraman. We also had a Chinese cameraman. And lo and behold, we were finishing up our shoot there. We got back to the car, and there were about 6 security people waiting for us. They held us for an hour and a half. They kept bringing in supervisors, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them over this 90 minutes. Rick, who is in his early 80s now, it was extremely hot and humid. He was starting to have, we thought, having a heat stroke. And anyway, we ended up, after an hour and a half, they finally let us go. And our Chinese cameraman, who of course was interpreting this whole time, because they kept yelling at us, what were we doing there? What were we doing there? And we sort of told the truth. We told them that we had been at the park the day before. One of the guards had told us there were orcas down there. We were doing a film on orcas, and we were just there to see if we could see them. Well, it was more or less true. But anyway, as we left, the Chinese cameraman said that the reason they let us go was because we had skirted their security, and they did not want to have to report to their management and uppers about, you know, what had gone on and why, how we got past their security and into this place. But for 90 minutes or so, boy, we were sweating bullets, because as Rick says in the film, to go to jail in China could have been really ugly.
Absolutely. The harrowing experiences of being a documentary filmmaker, I suppose it's part of the excitement, and it's part of what feels so compelling to you, along with this very important story to get out. I would say Long Gone Wild is sort of takes off where Blackfish left off. So Blackfish came out in 2013, I believe,
right?
Your film this year. And I'm wondering, I mean, again, you go through, take the history of holding orcas in captivity. And this was a story I didn't know. It went back to 1965. First, a guy who owned the Seattle Aquarium.
Yes.
Can you tell us the history of Namu and how it sort of evolved into where it was, not where it is now?
Sure.
At least I guess it is in China.
Well, for years, orcas were considered, the name roughly translates demons from hell, and that's what orcas were considered. The Navy even had their manual out, which we speak about in the film, that said, if you see one, get out of the water immediately. They'll tear you apart. In 1965, a guy by the name of Ted Griffin, who, as you mentioned, owned the Seattle Aquarium, heard about an orca that had been trapped by some fishermen up in Namu, British Columbia. He flew up there, paid them $8,000, brought the whale back in a floating cage. His family followed the whole time.
Namu's family.
And they named the whale Namu, and he put Namu on display. This was a worldwide story. I mean, it was huge. And immediately, virtually overnight, the reputation of the killer whale as this demon from hell changed into this magnificent, beautiful animal that was basically a big teddy bear.
Wow. So demons from hell, I hadn't heard that before, the Latin name of the orca. The killer whale, get out of the water if you see one. Orcas attack the largest mammal, which is the
blue whale.
Mm-hmm. And yet we, SeaWorld and other marine parks, put them in with these young, naive trainers. That's just really amazing when we look back on it, knowing what we know now.
Hmm? Well, it is. SeaWorld has been doing this for some 50 years, as you know, and there have been relatively few major incidents. I mean, the whales are very smart. They're very trainable, but they are cetaceans are the only animals in captivity that have to perform to be fed, and that's essentially what they do. And so the trainers keep them on the cusp of hunger a lot of the time because it's really the only control mechanism that they really have with these whales. So, it is a very difficult situation because you've got an orca that weighs 8,000 pounds, and a trainer like Dawn Branchow, who was killed by Tilikum, she weighed about 120 pounds.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Bill Neal. He's written and directed the 2019 documentary, Long Gone Wild. The film's an important, compelling, it's a timely film. It's a powerful message regarding the cruel and inhumane treatment of one of the world's most spectacular and beloved animals, the orca. Bill, we know from so much experience now that human beings that are isolated will stop eating, will become depressed, will eventually die. Human beings have to be among themselves. Human beings need human beings, and we've also learned over time that orcas and many, many other mammals, maybe all mammals, are the same. Can you talk about what some of these isolated orcas, what's happening with them, and about the sanctuary project and how that will really relieve a lot of problems?
Well, yes, the orcas in captivity, it's been proven over the years, they're basically bored is the bottom line, and boredom can kill, and so orcas are often very depressed. As I mentioned earlier, they swim in circles their entire lives. And SeaWorld, of course, has been the major proponent of orcas over the years. And they actually had a point in their defense because they said, well, people want the whales to be free, but where are they going to go? Because the whales cannot just be returned to the wild. They don't know how to hunt for the most part. They don't know how to kill. So they had a point, but now you mentioned sanctuaries. There is a group called the Whale Sanctuary Project. They've been working now for the past 3 years to develop a site or sites in North America. They're looking on both the East Coast and the West Coast, which would be a seaside sanctuary that would be basically blocked off. It would be a cove that would have basically be blocked off on one end. It would be some 300 times the size of their pools that they're in now.
Because they would perish if they were put back into the ocean they need to be blocked off. Is that correct?
Exactly, because they would continue to, they'd need to be fed, and they would need veterinarian care, all of which would be provided at this location. But again, they would be back in their natural habitat. There would be the tides. There would be fish could come in and out of this area that's blocked off. So it would be an opportunity for them to really live and thrive again. And potentially, some could be released back into the wild. Lolita, who has been in a park in Miami, the Miami Seaquarium, for almost 50 years, she was captured in 1970. Her family is still in Puget Sound. They believe her mother is still alive.
Wow.
And so if she were to go back to a seaside sanctuary, their communication levels are so high that they would speak to one another. Her family would know she's there. And would they accept her back after all this time? That's a question that I don't think anybody could answer. But the seaside sanctuaries do offer now an opportunity for captive orcas to be retired to their natural habitat.
Most documentaries take 2+ years to make. You made this documentary in less than a year, and I know that you felt it was such a compelling message, and that was really a lot of incentive for you to really work hard and to get the product out. But also, you had technology, you know, because we are a technology show, science and technology. Can you tell us about some of the things, because you've been in this business for a long time, that have come along over the last 10 years that have helped you to collapse that time frame?
Sure. Certainly the camera equipment these days is better and less expensive than it was 10 or 15 years ago. We use two high-end Sony cameras on our shoots. And so to be able to first of all, afford that, because most documentarians, myself included, you know, we're all working on very tight budgets and tight timelines and so forth. So that's one thing. The editing side, the post-production side, the equipment, the tools that the editors have now on both video and sound design has improved dramatically over the last 10 or 15 years. And I mentioned when we talked earlier about a service, voice recognition for transcribing, which
it's gotten pretty good.
It's gotten very good. I was frankly amazed when I saw this company we worked with called Trint. They offered a free service, basically, to 30 minutes. They would transcribe 30 minutes, and we had 20 some interviews in the show, so we had a lot of transcribing to do. And this voice recognition came back, and I was amazed. Even people's names, it got right. And so we ended up using this service, which was not only faster than humans can do it, but much less expensive. The cost was 20% of what it is to hire humans to do this work. So for documentarians, I think it's a great thing because of the timing, but also the expense.
And how about drones?
Drones, yes. Drones are magnificent for getting footage that you otherwise wouldn't capture. We use drones up in Puget Sound to capture some of the prospective sites for the Seaside Sanctuary, and we got very lucky because we were up there in late May, and they had rain for 6 weeks in a row, and we had a gorgeous sunny day that was 70 degrees. So we got some beautiful footage, and so, you know, by flying that drone over, you give viewers a perspective of what this might look like that they would never otherwise have, because you're showing this huge space compared to what they live in, the captive orcas live in now, which is, again, basically a hotel swimming pool.
Mm. I'm a little fixated on reuniting an orca with its family. Has that ever been done before? You mentioned that Lolita might be at some point reunited with her family.
Yes, Lolita, as I said, has been there for 50 years. The only real opportunity to see a whale released was, of course, Keiko, who was the star of Free Willy, which the movie that was done back in the 90s. And we follow that story in our film, and Keiko was released and eventually ended up in Iceland and Norway. So there was this opportunity to release the whale, and it was a five-year project. What we cover is a situation where Keiko met some other orcas in the wild, and they were tracking it to see how that exchange would happen. And neither Keiko nor the other whales seemed to care much about one another at all. And Keiko went back to her boat. She basically, they took her on what they called walks. They took them on walks and out from the pen and back. And so it's considered a success, but it didn't really demonstrate what exactly it would be like for, say, Lolita if she went back to Puget Sound and could actually hear her family. Because Keiko's family, they didn't know where the family was.
Mm. And Namu's family that followed back in 1965 followed this moving pen from British Columbia back down to Seattle. Do you know how long that family stuck around waiting for their beloved?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know that anybody really tracked that. If they did, I'm not familiar with it.
Right. Mm.
One of the first questions I know our listeners will be asking is, how can they see this film? Can you give us an update on distribution?
Sure. We are now speaking with some distributors about getting the film out, and hopefully we'll make a decision in the next week or so. And it'll take probably about 8 weeks to ramp up and roll out the film. In the meantime, people can go to our website, www.longgonewild.com. And there will be updates there. They can find out information about the film, the crew, and some of the information about killer whales that many people may not be aware of. I think a lot of people in the wake of Blackfish believe that the orcas are no longer there for some reason, but they are. And as impactful as Blackfish was, and of course it almost put SeaWorld out of business, 6 years later, nothing has changed for the whales. There is a different show that they put on now. It's more educational than they had before. But the whales still come out and do their tricks. And what's so ironic is on the big jumbo screen, you see orcas in the wild. So the trainers talk about all these amazing things that orcas do in the wild, and the audience sees this on the jumbo screen, and then they call out, and the orcas come swimming out and do their tricks to get fed, and then they go back to the back pool.
Is it also clear on your website how to get in touch with you personally?
Yes.
Okay, because there may be someone out there that has contacts that would like to be able to view the film and with a possible role in distribution.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so get in touch with Bill.
Yeah, and then how about when you make a documentary film, how does the film festival, I don't want to say circuit because I know it's not a circuit, but how do you approach that to get the film out to make it available to possible distributors?
The film festivals are a good way to get the word out. We have submitted to several. We did not get into Sundance, unfortunately, but we were very early in the film. What we sent to Sundance was not the finished product, so I didn't feel too badly about that. Plus, they had over 14,000 submissions,
incredible.
Which is incredible. So we have submitted to several other film festivals, and we'll see what happens.
Mm. I'm curious, Bill, the film is filmed in 4K. Is that the new norm, for documentaries?
It is. Netflix and the other major streaming networks, they pretty much require the film to be shot in 4K because you get such great resolution. And that will also hold up in movie theaters as well.
It's a wonderful film. Bill Neal is a Park City resident and filmmaker, among many other talents. Thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio, and best of luck.
Thank you, Lynn. John, appreciate it.
Bill, great to have you on.